I think your argument is if you regulate it wrongly, it will not only stop the bad uses, but it will also stop the good uses, right?
Let's take a different example
okay. That
maybe gives us 60, 70 years to think about.
Right.
Nuclear energy. The chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission in 1954 said it is not too far-fetched in our children's lifetime to imagine that they will have energy too cheap to meter. And we are no closer to achieving that moment in nuclear than we were in 1954, mm-hmm. right? Because we regulated the technology in an effort to maximize our protection from the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, we minimized the benefit and the promise that it had. So you can look back and say, AI in some ways is our nuclear moment. How we think about intelligence could be dramatically changed and reformed in a way that we can only begin to imagine if we embrace it.
Americans are capable of achieving extraordinary things when they have the freedom and opportunity to do so. This is American Potential. And here's your host, Jeff Crank.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of American Potential. We're going to talk about something we have not yet talked about on this podcast, technology. I mean, it's incredible what's happening. Entering, a different world now, and emerging technologies have become a part of our rapidly evolving world, shaping the way that we live, work, and interact with others. And these advancements hold the promise of solving complex problems, improving efficiency, and potentially enhancing our overall quality of life. However, there are some people that are pretty hesitant to these advancements, and one organization is focused on educating and informing about these frontier technologies to prevent panic policymaking. And our guest today is an expert in regulation, competition, and innovation. A Forbes 30 Under 30 awardee in 2016 for law and policy. His background includes roles as the executive director of the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University and a senior research fellow at George Mason University's Mercatus Center. Currently, he's a senior affiliated scholar with Mercatus. He contributes to the IT and Emerging Technology Working Group at the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, while also serving as vice chair of Utah's Personal Privacy Oversight Commission. I want to welcome Chris Koopman, who is the executive director at the Abundance Institute, to the show. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, that's a lot of words, man.
That's a lot.
You've done a lot of things.
Yeah. We could probably shorten it a little bit.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
We want to impress our audience. So
there you go.
Anyway, we're talking about some of this stuff beforehand, and it really does scare people. Like a lot of this AI stuff, I was talking about our podcast and how our podcast, we use AI and we turn it into a Spanish version so that we can take the ideas of freedom and liberty and get it to a whole new audience that may not listen otherwise. So it is amazing what can be done, but so many people are scared of that innovation. That's what you're talking about, right? Is making sure that we help people overcome that objection.
Yeah, and I think with any emerging technology, there is tremendous promise.
Right.
You can think through the last 100 years of technological breakthroughs and the life we're living today is made far better as a result of that. But you can go back through every single one of those technological breakthroughs and things that we don't even think about as breakthroughs anymore. And you can almost certainly, if you look hard enough, you don't even have to look that hard, Jeff. If you just look a little bit, you will find people who raised concerns about this technology from the beginning. Panic and pessimism is almost an inherent response mm-hmm. to anything new. Right. I think this is just how humans respond to things. And a key part of what we're trying to do at the Abundance Institute is help people overcome that panic and pessimism long before this technology ever reaches the market. So we don't end up in situations where we have a tremendously promising technology that is ready to go and change our lives and make everything better for people in ways that we could never imagine. But we shut it down
mm-hmm.
and we stop it because we're afraid of something. I mean, perfect examples of some of this. you know, when the bicycle was introduced, right? We don't think about that as technology now, but it is technology.
Right.
When the bicycle was introduced, people were very concerned about, I mean, there was moral panic over bike face, that like young men and women would be permanently stuck with a shocked look on their face because they would ride at such great speeds, right? Or autonomous elevators, right? At one point in time, humans, there was someone whose full-time job it was,
right,
like to just crank an elevator until it landed on a floor. And then all of a sudden we realized you could automate that.
Right.
People were gravely concerned about this, right? The advent of the radio, television, all sorts of things have been met with panic and pessimism. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we've overcome it and we've allowed the technology to develop and emerge and become what it is today. And other times we haven't. And our goal at the Abundance Institute is make sure that we're breaking down those societal and policy barriers to ensure that we can see these technologies reach their full promise and potential, rather than simply looking back decades later and wishing we had done something different.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Abundance Institute first. And, you know, like, what is it what's your mission? What is it that you're trying to do overall?
Yeah. So the Abundance Institute, at its core, we are a mission-driven nonprofit that is creating space for emerging technology to fulfill its potential.
Okay.
Right. That is it in a nutshell. What does that mean in practice? That means we are working on making sure that we're demystifying and encouraging optimism around emerging technologies, that we're bringing a level of measured optimism, that we're working with policymakers to help them understand what it is exactly they're looking at and dealing with, mm-hmm. so they can respond accordingly. I'm not saying everything's perfect, but what I am saying is that we should allow technology to at least evolve in some way before we decide for ourselves what is and isn't the biggest problems that need to occur before the technology even reaches daylight. In some instances, we're doing this, mm-hmm. right? And the goal of the Abundance Institute is through communications, through outreach, through research, through media, to engage in a narrative shift in our culture around technology and help break down policy barriers that are keeping us from seeing the society that we know we can have.
Right.
And ensuring that these technologies become a key part to helping Americans achieve their version of the American dream.
Sure, sure. What are some of the emerging technologies that you see right now mm-hmm. that show that maybe can help people not be afraid of these technologies?
Yeah, so like, let's just narrow in on AI.
Okay, right?
Let's just narrow in on artificial intelligence.
They hear AI and they think, oh, I'm just, like many people are just scared of the phrase AI.
Yeah, and I think for us at the Abundance Institute, the moment about, you know, the fall of 2022 was really the moment that everyone began to talk about AI, mm-hmm. right? This is when ChatGPT is released, people are starting to play around with it. And within 6 months of that, right? Within 6 months, there's this massive Senate hearing, mm-hmm. right? This is this huge Senate hearing in which the founder of OpenAI and the founder of a legacy tech company and an academic all sit at a table in front of the Senate and tell them how bad the technology is, right?
Right.
Now, you could quibble with the why that they're doing this. Maybe they're, you know, some of this is an effort to capture the regulation for themselves. Some of this is, you know, a legacy company seeing an incumbent as a problem. An academic is, you know, just doing what academics do.
Right.
But we let that dictate sort of our national conversation around AI, right? Never thinking to ourselves, well, what is artificial intelligence? How are we engaging with it? Like, is it as bad as we're being told that it is? And I think, frankly, when you drill down to AI, for example, to your question about how are we engaging with this technology, many of us have been interacting with AI and not even knowing it for a long time, right? And it's been making our lives way better, right? Spam filters on our email.
Right.
That is a version of artificial intelligence, right?
Sure.
It's seeing your emails come in and it's saying, well, this is one Jeff wants to see. This is one Jeff would probably be annoyed if he saw it. And so let's go put that in another folder, put it away, and he can see it and decide for himself later.
Sure.
Right.
Okay.
Spell check. All right. Did you mean like, or autocorrect on your phones? Did you mean to write this? Let me just suggest it for you.
No, I don't like autocorrect, I must say. It gets me in a lot of trouble.
It could get you in a lot of trouble. Or someone like me who there's just, I'm a fast typer.
Yeah.
And I, you know, if there weren't autocorrect, I think most people would think that I'm just speaking gibberish, right? It has made someone like me far more articulate, sure. Right?
Sure.
I think there's that. There's all sorts of ways we've been engaged. Maps, Google Maps. How many people use the maps on their phones now to the point where like, I even just drive to the grocery store and I just put the address to the grocery store in my phone.
So you consider all of that artificial intelligence.
Those are all versions of artificial intelligences that we've been engaging with, right? Yeah. These are, in essence, it's just a computer algorithm that is making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are more complex and some of them are less complex. And we've been engaging with AI for some time. These new chatbots are somewhat new, ChatGPT or Bard or any of these others that people could be interacting with. And now they're image generating ones like Midjourney that are actually creating pictures and things that seem like photographs. And there are people who are very concerned about what this may do to society. But I think we need to keep it grounded in reality and let that dictate how we respond, not just as a society, but in particular as public policymakers respond, because oftentimes they're running in front of the parade to lead it.
Right.
And if the panic is loud enough within sort of just our general national conversation, certainly Congress is going to think it has to do something.
Right.
And that's where we're at.
Right.
Right. I think now you see the Biden executive order, which is all of government approach to regulating AI. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it's built on this idea that AI may have promise, but it is certainly going to exacerbate everything wrong in society. So we need to make sure it doesn't do that. And if we approach it that way, trying to fight off the worst case scenarios, we will never, never realize the best case scenarios.
Yeah. What about people who have concerns that it can go too far? Well, Elon Musk has criticized, you know, that AI could be very, very dangerous if it's not. I don't know if he's called for regulation. Has he called for regulation of it? I mean, I think he's just cautioned us to be careful with AI. Do you agree with that assessment that it has to be? You may not agree with regulation, but do you agree that we've got to be careful with what we do with AI?
Let's use a specific example.
Okay.
Right. I think right now there are a lot of concerns about what AI may do to our elections.
Sure.
Right. There's a lot of this going on. There were conversations recently about a robocall with an AI generated voice of President Biden sharing election misinformation
and
I think that people have these concerns. What could AI do? I want to set killer AI aside. And I will say this. I think the concerns about killer AI are silly, right? They're unfounded in many ways, given the current technology. We're dealing with like dog and cat AI, right? This is Jan LeCun, like one of the founders of sort of this entire field of computer science in some ways, the modern version of it, right? He's sort of a key person in this, has said, you know, we're not dealing with super complex AI. This is very basic logic being done here by these models. And we need to recognize that, it may be easy to say, well, there's an AI generated voice from the president telling somebody to do something. Or early in the Russian-Ukrainian war, there was a deep fake of Vladimir Zelensky telling the people of Ukraine, put down your arms. Right. Now, nobody did. Right. And it was ferreted out very quickly as misinformation. But people have deep concerns about how AI may be used to create misinformation or disinformation or affect the integrity of our elections. At the same time, I would say that AI could also serve as a key tool in ferreting out some of the worst actors, you know, engaged in fraudulent behavior, right? In some ways, you could imagine, you know, the social media companies, you know, those involved in sort of sharing information, right? Leveraging these tools that they already use, the App Store, Google Play Store, all of your apps are many times already evaluated by AI. That's how they decide which ones go in and don't go in, right? Mm-hmm. Or ones are verified.
Sure.
You could imagine that same technology being pointed at cheap fakes and deep fakes and all these things. So we could, in essence, create a private sector led Iron Dome that would keep foreign election misinformation far away from our TVs and our computer screens and whatever. But I think an effort to regulate the technology and say it's bad, right, ignores the promise that the same technology could have to stop those worst actors that we have concerns about.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. So, and I don't want you to take these questions as, you know, I'm for regulation because I'm not in this. Right. But there are the citizens will listen to this and they hear the stories of, you know, somebody who fraudulently calls their grandma and it's in their granddaughter's voice. They've used AI to generate it. Hey, grandma, I need your help. And they're scamming people and stuff like that. All obviously bad stuff, right? That's not an argument to regulate it, right? Because people will misuse stuff like that. But how do we do? Your argument would be that we can also use AI to stop people from doing that, right?
Yeah, and I would differentiate the technology from its use.
Okay.
Right? So if we want to stop people from engaging in fraudulent behavior, and now scam calls in an effort to fraudulently take money from people have been going on. It's already a crime,
right,
and it's been going on long before there was any app that could make the voice sound like, you know, your grandniece who says, "I'm stuck in this place and I need you to send me thousands of dollars. Right, go to Western Union and wire it to me now, or I'll be stuck in this place forever." And I would say focusing on the use and saying, do we have laws to stop it already? And whether or not writing a law on top of that regulates AI is actually going to stop. I mean, these are criminals.
Right.
Right. So they're already stealing the money. I think having a law that now says you can't use AI over the phone in certain ways isn't going to stop the worst actors, right? Because they're just going to continue to do it. So I think having this measured approach to thinking about the technology, its use, and whether or not building out a big regulatory apparatus is going to protect the misuse and encourage the best uses.
Your argument is if you regulate it wrongly, it will not only stop the bad uses, but it will also stop the good uses, right?
Certainly. And I think let's take a different example that maybe gives us 60, 70 years to think about.
This
nuclear energy, right? I think nuclear energy is a technology that has existed for quite some time.
Right.
And we have failed to embrace that technology as a promising route to cheap, clean, plentiful energy too cheap to meter, right? The chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission in 1954 said it is not too far-fetched in our children's lifetime to imagine that they will have energy too cheap to meter, right? And he was talking about nuclear energy as sort of the primary source of how people are electrifying their homes, right? In the 50s, that within our children's lifetime. Now think about this. This is someone who had a child in 1954 or past that, right? That's the generation we're talking about, is the boomers. Within the boomers' lifetime, within the baby boomers' lifetime, he runs the Atomic Energy Commission. This should be one of the foremost experts in understanding nuclear energy in America, if not the world. And he thinks we can do this, right? We can implement this technology to achieve plentiful, abundant energy for everyone, right?
Right.
Now, what year were you born?
1967.
If you don't mind me asking.
No, I don't mind that. Yeah. 1967.
67. So he may have had you in mind.
Right.
Right. He's thinking our children. So these are people who are probably having children in the 50s and 60s. Right. And those people born in that time in the 50s have children who have had children, right? Who are on the verge of having children. Right. So we're maybe 2, 3, 4 generations removed from that statement. And we are no closer to achieving that moment in nuclear than we were in 1954, right? Because we regulated the technology in an effort to maximize our protection from the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, we minimized the benefit and the promise that it had. So you can look back and say, AI in some ways is our nuclear moment. It's not nuclear energy for the record. Now I'm not talking about nuclear weapons or anything. I'm talking about like nuclear energy. We could fundamentally rethink the way we engage with the internet, with computers, our own minds, right? How we think about intelligence could be dramatically changed and reformed in a way that like we can only begin to imagine if we embrace it,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's real promise here. You think the idea of having an AI co-pilot in the triage room at an emergency room that someone comes in and explains their symptoms, and instead of a doctor or a nurse trying to spend all their time diagnosing, the AI can help them diagnose and the doctor and nurse can now spend more time treating, right? You can imagine access to justice, right? Like there is a tremendous opportunity here for people who can't afford best-in-class legal service to get tremendous legal support mm-hmm. from these AI technologies. There's tremendous problems. These are just, there's so many cooking up, right? It's our moment, but it's a choice, right? We can choose a future for AI that looks like nuclear or not, where you and I are sitting here 70 years later and saying like, gosh, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
If we would have done something just a little different in the 1960s and 70s. I mean, these were deliberate choices made by the federal government in an effort to protect us, right? The decline in the promise of nuclear was a choice,
right?
The commercial internet, right, is the same thing, right? Like we made a different choice, right? The advent of the commercial internet, the Clinton administration, right, said we will take a light touch approach in which the private sector leads. And that has been the dominant regulatory paradigm of the internet for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
Right? And Europe chose a different path, right? So we can see these things play out in real time. And I think this moment with AI is the same type of moment, is if we aren't careful in the way we evaluate risk, in the way mm-hmm. we think about risk, in the way we, whether or not we buy into the worst stories about artificial intelligence, we could have a future in which, it doesn't matter who you are or how much money you have. You have the same access to all of the knowledge mm-hmm. and experience and strategy and expertise that someone sitting in the C-suite has, right? Like it's going to level the playing field by not bringing people down, but by taking those folks and making access to all sorts of things tremendously easier and cheaper.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's the right. I don't want to like pivot away from the, what about robocallers?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think like, some of this is like you can always cook up the worst case scenarios with any technology.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's just a matter of embracing. You talk about panic policymaking, right? And that's what you're trying to avoid. People just being scared of a technology. Nuclear energy is a great example of that, right? The panic setting in and then policymakers responding to that and not letting us reach the full potential of what mm-hmm. the technology can bring us, right? Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, you could use different examples. We could, like, something like 100 people die a day in automobile-related accidents in which the driver is at fault, right? We could reduce that to zero overnight.
Yeah.
Just ban cars.
Right? Sure.
Right, but for some reason, as a society, we have all agreed to accept
that risk.
That risk, yeah, right? Sure. And I don't think anybody is saying we need to ban cars, right? Or we need
to. Well, there are a few people.
There may be, but for different reasons. for different reasons, right? Those are people who I think would like to see a lot of technology banned and a lot of things go away. Right. But I think on the whole, as a society, we accept that risk every day.
Right.
We get up and most of us get in our cars and drive to work, accepting that risk that most of us, I mean, maybe listeners are on their way to work right now in the car, right? My guess is, Some portion, probably a large portion of those people listening to this in their car or, who will be in a car today, will see a car accident at some point. And we accept that risk, right? Because we've been able to understand just the tremendous benefit that automobiles have brought to society and mobility and our ability to get to and from work and think about, you know, where we can go and what life can provide us. I think the same goes for artificial intelligence. I think, and this is why I think the back to my point earlier about killer AI, why I think that's just kind of a, like, I don't want to be dismissive of it. It's just a silly risk. It's not an overwhelm. Like it is not going to happen in any way in any appreciable amount of time, right? People are talking about far off. And I don't think people recognize that, like, the folks who are talking about this are talking way out in advance. They're speculating on what could happen way in the future as this mm-hmm. technology develops. And so people are thinking about that way out there. Now they're bringing it back and saying, so we need to ban it today. We need heavy regulation today.
Yeah.
We need to do all these things today. And it's like, well, why don't we mitigate risk as it arrives?
Yeah.
And we can evaluate it in a real way, engage in some cost benefit analysis and do the hard work of policymaking.
Yeah.
Right. Which is rolling up your sleeves and understanding the real situation as opposed to just buying into the story and saying, well, you know,
it's
just not worth the risk.
Right. Well, fire. I'm sure when fire was first created, right, there probably we could have banned that because it is definitely dangerous to have fire in certain conditions, right? But think of all the things that we couldn't have had throughout human history if we hadn't done that.
It's a perfect example.
Yeah.
And I think I think what else it speaks to is, you know, the whether or not it provides warmth, heat, light, you know, reducing, you know, you're cooking your meat, boiling your water, all sorts of things that fire can do. In the wrong hands, it will certainly cause problems. And so what we've done is tried to reduce the ways in which it can cause problems and not just outright ban the technology.
Right.
I think some of the efforts now are just simply, you know, built on this idea that we'd be better off just pausing,
mm-hmm.
right? You've heard this quite a bit and it comes up again. It's just pause the development for a while.
How would you even pause development? Let's say the United States said, well, we're going to pause development. You're not going to pause development in China or, you know, Russia or other countries. They're going to continue to do it, right?
Yeah. And then in that way, right, the technology will reflect the values and principles of the developer and the culture that the developer came from, because a lot of this is like logic and weighting and probability and, you know, how you direct it and train it. And so pausing in the United States is just giving an upper hand to many of the worst actors in the world
mm-hmm.
to shape this technology.
Yeah.
Not just to give them an upper hand, but now the technology does invade. If we're concerned about, you know, free speech and AI, or we're concerned about, you know, how AI will think and treat humans and respond to them, right? Like if you're concerned about the ones being built in the United States, right, just wait until you stop all of those and mm-hmm. the AIs you have access to are coming from.
Right. There was a congressional hearing on AI. What was said in that hearing? Was it sort of people afraid of AI, or what were you hearing?
Yeah. So I alluded to this earlier, right? So you have the founder of OpenAI, you have a representative of IBM, and you have an academic from NYU.
Yeah.
From one of America's elite institutions, all sitting there side by side, more or less saying the same thing, right? Like you have OpenAI saying, we're not the problem, but that next version of the AI, that's the problem. And that's mm-hmm. the one you ought to be concerned about, mm-hmm. right? You have IBM saying, like, you know us, we're Watson. Right. You know, it's from Jeopardy, or maybe you play fantasy sports on ESPN and we help you pick your roster that week. Sure. Don't worry about us, but you should be worried about that next version of AI.
Right.
Then you have the academic that's just worried about everything. Right. Mm-hmm. So what they got was a lot of fear, a lot of worry, very little optimism. And frankly, I think the last decade of tech policy at a national level has been dominated by just, frankly, confusion. Right. I mean, many of us who have been following this and maybe people who didn't can probably remember the moment that Mark Zuckerberg was asked, how does Facebook make money?
Mm-hmm.
Right. He was, we run ads. Right. Right. Like that's kind of the level of understanding that a lot of Congress has around tech policy. Right. Now, that was social media. AI is far more complex. Right. In terms of understanding how the actual models work.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a mix of misunderstanding and pessimism and panic and self-interest on the part of the people testifying.
Sure.
And what you didn't see was a voice of optimism, right? You didn't see that narrative that says, well, wait a second. Sure, it's okay to be concerned, right? I mean, this is, I have six kids, Jeff. I'm telling my boys this all the time. It's okay to be afraid, but what you do about that fear, that's what you got to think about, mm-hmm. right? People are inherently, I mean, you can't make yourself not afraid of something. Right. Right? Yeah. Like the fear is just there sometimes, right? What you do about it, I think, is really determining sort of whether sure. or not you see a positive or negative outcome.
Right.
And so you just, that voice wasn't represented, right? And I think going back to what is the Abundance Institute, this is why the Abundance Institute exists, is to provide that voice to help identify and develop and amplify those champions for the future, right? Mm-hmm. Those people who can sit at that table across from the Senate and say, now hold on, like, wait a minute, there is tremendous promise here, right? Like, I understand you're afraid,
right?
But just wait, right? If we called for anything relating to a pause around AI, it should be a congressional pause, right? Like, just stop for a second
yeah.
and let the technology develop for 12 months, right? We had a 6-month pause called for over almost a year ago. Let's uh-huh. just round it out to right. a year. We had a 6-month pause called for a year ago because if we didn't pause for 6 months, we could ruin the world. Now, we didn't pause the development of AI. We're double that timeline now, right? We're 12 months out. Not only has the world not been ruined, but we're seeing some amazing uses of technology, especially AI, in making the world wildly better. In the course of 12 months, I mean, the things people have access to already and the ways that AI has been embedded in other things people are doing. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. Now just imagine if we had done that pause.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, last question here, but what are some of the industries or sectors of our economy that are really implementing AI and really seeing a benefit? And probably driving down costs, mm-hmm. Driving up productivity. What are some of the sectors and industries that are seeing advancements there?
So I think the ones that you're seeing a lot, like the ones I'm most excited about, maybe I'll put it that way. I think you're seeing AI being implemented in the personal tax space, right? Automated accountants, right? Mm-hmm. Like the tax code is extremely complex. I think we know this, mm-hmm. right? And until we fix it, we still have to comply.
Right.
And having this AI run alongside that will provide, I think, a lot of opportunity for people to have, you know, a fighting chance of getting it right.
Right.
Right. So you've got that. You've got education. I think the ability of AI right now to disrupt the education space and the way it's being used already in education, right, is providing tremendous opportunity for kids to, in some ways, get personal learning, right? And in many ways, these programs are responding directly to the students, right? And we have a teacher shortage. We know this. And in some ways, technology is going to be our solution to this. And I think education is a great example of this. Healthcare is going, I mean, I think the way we think about the role of doctors and the role of healthcare in our lives is going to change dramatically over the next 5 to 10 years because of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. I think those are just a couple that I'm really, yeah. I'm really excited about, but I don't think there will be an industry, right? And I'm not like I don't think that there will be an industry in the next 5 years that isn't disrupted in some ways by the implementation of artificial intelligence into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. Tell us a little bit more of, like, if people want to know more about the Abundance mm-hmm. Institute, how can they find out more? How can they find out more about AI and the value of AI and not regulating this sector of our economy?
Yeah, I would say the easiest way to find us is abundance.institute.
Okay.
That's it. Come there. It's our website. It's the best entry point. We've got a bunch of staff that aren't necessarily writing on that website, but are writing in a bunch of major outlets. And that's, I think, the best way to see all the stuff we're doing. We've got a number of video series we'll be putting out over the next several months to help people understand this technology, to help them understand some of the big debates around AI in particular and emerging technology, generally speaking. But I think the best is you can find us on YouTube, Facebook, right? All of it, where you are, we are, yeah. Right? But I think the best way to get a start and figure out, you know, of the stuff we're doing, what interests you most, it's abundance.institute.
Awesome.
That's it.
All right, Chris, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun to talk.
Yeah, it's been great. Well, listen, this is, to some people, scary, but we can't let being scared of technology, as Chris said, lead to regulation, because that will be the worst thing, where we overregulate this. And what a great example he gave of nuclear energy and where we might be today, how much lower our energy costs would be to heat our home, to do so many things in our lives, if we had followed through on that technology and not been so afraid and overregulated it out of panic or fear. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for watching.
Thank you for listening to American Potential. You may listen to more stories from Americans working every day to expand freedom and opportunity in their communities by visiting AmericanPotential.com.